young, I'd listen to the radio.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Bob Trout speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
This is Mutual.
This is ABC Radio Network.
Hi, and welcome to Same Time, Same Station. And we're going to look at Doris Day Part 2 in this two-hour-long show. In about an hour or so, we'll go visit Perry Huntoon and Walden and Larry and I as we presented Doris Day. And mainly Perry. We just kind of sat around saying, yeah, that sounds good. In about a half hour or so, we will hear from Paul Harvey in a very brief excerpt about Doris Day. But right now, we're going to go back to Mike Rapshack from 1987, December of that year, and his look at Doris Day.
It's Doris Day and Les Brown. It's about 45 minutes. So here we go. 1987, the Mike Rapshack Show.
Everything involving you, you two and me, and this Thornhill's theme song, and Frank Comstock's arrangement, and Frank's Les's arranger, and I'm sure Doris, you were with Les when Frank was doing some charts, right?
Well, oh my! The whole time I was there, he was with us.
That's right.
Sure.
Oh, who made that arrangement on Snowfall? That's
I don't
beautiful.
Remember.
It's Comstock.
It is a Comstock?
Yeah, Frank Comstock.
Are
We're doing
sure?
an album with him starting Monday.
Are you really?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Are you sure it was Frank?
Yes, ma'am. Yeah, I have. In fact, you had Dick Hazard and Pete King and Frank Comstock. That's the only one he did.
Is that right?
Yes, the album calls, the holiday album, Christmas album, the Doris Day Christmas album. Right, Pete King did I'll Be Home for Christmas and Silver Bells. And Be a Child at Christmas Time, and Winter Wonderland, and Christmas Song, and White Christmas. And Dick Hazard, who was another wonderful arranger, I think, did the Christmas Waltz. Gosh, that's a great thing.
I haven't heard that album. I'm going to get that for next year, Doris.
All right.
Doris, you know when that was recorded?
No.
I have no idea either.
What year is this?
hey, let me take you back. You mentioned what year is this? You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
And it's hello again, ladies and gentlemen, from the Cafe Rouge of the Hotel Pennsylvania, the Statler Hotel here in the middle of New York City. Again, the music of that band of renown, Les Brown and his orchestra. Well, today we find that Doris Day, the lovely songstress, is indisposed with a cold, and so Jane Harvey is here to sing the words, as well as our ever faithful Coach Stone. Want to give us a listen for a while?
My God.
What was that?
Another one, though.
Good evening, everyone. From the Cafe Rouge of the Hotel Pennsylvania in Midtown Manhattan, CBS brings you Les Brown and his orchestra, with vocals handled by Doris Day, Gordon Drake, Butch Stone, and Randy Brooks.
Randy Brooks.
Randy Brooks singing.
Midtown Manhattan moves in now as your AFRS New Year's dancing party swings into the home stretch and picks up that band of renown, Les Brown from the Hotel Pennsylvania, 34th Street and 7th Avenue, New York City. Now here's Les playing his famous Twilight Time.
You can take a moon, gather up the stars and the robins that sing merrily. Put them in a box, tie them with a ribbon, and throw them in the deep blue sea.
Oh, isn't that funny?
Flowers
down in Lover's Lane.
Isn't that funny?
I don't remember that one.
Poetry.
That's a motion picture.
Put them in a box.
That is really sweet.
And
throw
them in the deep blue sea. Then, Doris, you do this.
Gonna take a sentimental journey. Gonna set my heart at ease. Gonna make a sentimental journey.
And then, Les,
to
renew old memories.
Okay, now Les.
Yes.
This is Les Brown joining your host, Mike Rapchak, hoping your holiday season is filled with the love of family and good friends and a special hope for a wonderful new year. We wish you the merriest.
Better.
Bop, bop. Wish you the merriest, the merriest, the merriest. Yes, the merriest.
How's that?
That's good.
That's quite a collage. You just put that together?
Yeah, I put that together tonight at 10 after 9. Now, the first one, Doris, you were ill on December 28, 1945, so Jane Harvey filled in for you at the Café Rouge of the Hotel Pennsylvania.
That's when you were sick. Remember, Dodo?
Remember that?
How did I remember 1945?
Yeah, well, you were sick one time. Jane Harvey came in and subbed for you.
Jane Harvey.
She's still singing in New York.
She's still singing.
Yeah.
She's a jazz singer around New York.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then.
Did you ever see her, Les?
No, I haven't seen her. I just know about her.
I kind of remember what she looked like.
I don't think I've seen her
since the night she substituted for me.
Since the time she subbed for you.
and the other with Randy Brooks going to vocalize. That was funny.
Yeah, that is great.
And vocals by Randy Brooks.
Did he start singing?
Yeah, that was just hilarious.
Did he sing?
No. The announcer had it all wrong.
He had it all wrong. He had the trumpet player. And on the other side, Les, the announcer says, and now, let's see. Oh, it's Butch Stone and Just a Gigolo. And in comes Jane Harvey singing My Dreams Are Getting Better All the Time. That's the same broadcast. And the other was New Year's Eve, the end of the war, 1945. That's Armed Forces Radio broadcast. And they put them in a box. I saw the movie twice, Doris. Romance on the High Seas.
Uh-huh.
And the old Whiting, Hoosier Theater in Whiting, Indiana, my hometown. I went to see that twice. And I was really enamored of that piano player because those guys sounded like the King Cole Trio, the Page Cavanaugh.
Oh, Page Cavanaugh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And the Sentimental Journey you did.
He's still going.
Page? Yeah, he was here at Maxim's a couple years ago in Chicago.
And was he really?
Yeah, on a single.
How does he look?
He looked pretty good. Yeah, he looked pretty good.
Is he gray?
I noticed one, I think. One gray hair.
One gray hair.
I wish that's all I had.
I haven't seen him in so long.
He's still playing wonderfully well, and it was nice to see him again. Doris, I read your book, Her Own Story, which is co-written by A.E. Hotchner. And I was really impressed by what Jimmy Cagney said about you. And I want to quote him right here. Because when I saw the movie Young at Heart, and I'm thinking, well, there's Frank Sinatra, who sang with Tommy Dorsey. And there's Doris Day, who sang with Les Brown, my favorite band of all time. Here are the two singers who are now actor and actress and entertaining folks on the screen. And I wondered where in your young years did you ever think you would reach those goals? And Cagney says about you, and he's got to carry a lot of weight when he said, so what Doris has, and all the good ones have, is the ability to project a simple, direct statement of a simple, direct idea without cluttering it. That's what Doris brought to Love Me or Leave Me, the Ruth Etting picture. I rate among the top five of the 62 pictures that I made. That's what Cagney saying that.
I just saw that about a month ago on television.
Oh, did you?
Oh, and enjoyed it. You sounded great.
Doris, what's happening today? There's a rumor in the business here that you're going to do an album. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know what I'm going to do. I'm so busy.
If you ever want to do one, let me know, Doris.
Yeah, I will. Oh. I don't know what I'm going to do. I have a lot of things going on and films that are being written. If I like them, I don't mean to sound blasé, because I'm not, but I always say that, you know, it has to be something that I really want to do. And so a few things are being written for me to do in Carmel, if I'd like.
No kidding.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Because I don't really want to work in Los Angeles. If I wanted to do that, I would have stayed there.
Of course.
You know, I'm living up here now, and I really adore it. And
well,
if I start working again in L.A., that means that I can't be in Carmel.
Mm-hmm. You know, Les told me that you have this television show on cable, and the one of the first shows the band was on with you. Is that correct?
That's right.
Oh, great.
It was called Best Friends.
It was great fun.
It had to do with animals,
like
of course.
It was like a reunion.
Uh-huh. Yeah, a reunion. And tell us a story about the animals. You're interested in the animals, Doris.
Well, I have a pet foundation.
A pet foundation.
In fact, I have two.
Mm-hmm.
I have the Doris Day Pet Foundation, which is based in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And I have the Doris Day Animal League, which is based in Washington, D.C.
Ah.
And the one in Washington, D.C. has to do with legislation, of course. And the Doris Day Pet Foundation in L.A. has to do with helping strays and helping the elderly with, you know, taking care of their pets and the medical and feeding and spaying and neutering and taking in unwanted animals and placing them.
Do you know the lady songwriter in New York, Gladys Shelley?
No, I don't.
She wrote, for example, How Did He Look?
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, Joan Merrill made a record of, made her a hit.
Oh.
You remember that?
I do.
You ought to do that song, because I think you do a wonderful job.
Yeah,
anyhow,
I love that song.
She also is interested in animals, in stray animals, too. And I was in New York a couple months ago, and she had like six of them in her apartment. And we had a lot of fun.
You know what, Mike?
What?
That's nothing.
Yeah, that's right. I was going to say.
Six. Doesn't everybody have six?
Not I.
You should go up to Doris's place, Mike. I've been there.
All right. What does she have, Les?
Oh, no.
Don't tell him.
With cats and dogs and everything, at least 25 or more.
Les?
Oh. How many?
You're not supposed to say that.
Why not?
You know better than that.
I think it's great you're doing that, dear.
You're not supposed to say that.
Why? It's great.
Doris, I'm very flattered that you agreed to come on this program, because I know that there aren't too many shows in which you like to be interviewed, but this is a dual purpose, because my favorite band leader is that guy there, and you know he's celebrating his 50th year in show business, and I'm not through yet to telling you how good you are, Les.
No. But she knows that, because she's already done two things for me. One on a cassette that we did at Duke at the kickoff of the thing, and,
uh-huh.
and also when we did a Palladium here just recently, she sent in a wire, and Doris has been just great to me that way.
Of course, because you two are responsible for one of the great sounds ever recorded in the industry, I think, is The Sentimental Journey, and what it meant to the guys coming home after the war.
Yeah,
and
that it was just it was very timely.
Yes.
And that's what life is all about, isn't it?
Yes, it sure
it's
is.
What hits you at the moment.
Yes.
And what it means to you is it's that experience.
Yeah, you know, and someone once described your voice, I thought, quite attractively, said Doris Day sounds like an alto flute. What do you think, Les? Her voice.
Oh, no.
No?
I know it's as pure as can be. I've never heard her sing a note out of tune.
That's
in
right.
Life.
You know, one time, Les, you and I were talking about one of your girl singers, maybe 10 years ago, you said to me, her vibrato isn't right. She'll learn. It'll take her a couple years. There'll never be another Doris Day. I wish I could find one.
Yeah.
And so you were talking something technical about Doris, but she must have,
natural, pure, beautiful voice without that awful vibrato you hear on some some people.
Doris, when did you and Les get together? I understand you sang for Bob Crosby for a while.
Oh, I was just with Bob a very short time. Like 3 months is all.
It was very brief.
And then I went with Les.
And what?
And I didn't know anything about that time.
I got a write from Bob Crosby.
What?
I got you right coming off Bob Crosby's band.
That's right.
What audition?
Band theater in New York. I went backstage and we talked, and I had a new girl singer.
Yeah.
Oh, you saw the show?
The rest is history.
You saw her and heard her sing?
I auditioned her on stage.
I see.
I was in the audience, and she was up there. We had never met.
I see.
That's right.
I said, that's it.
That's
Tom Flagerell put me onto it. She Doris had given her notice to Bob Crosby, and he said I should listen to her. I did, and went backstage, and it's history, and we've been friends ever since.
She gave Bob Crosby her notice. Doris, where were you?
On notice when I heard about this. That's what I was told.
Oh, I see. I thought. Okay.
She was going back to Cincinnati. I saved her. She went back soon after that.
Doris, you remember an announcer at WLW in Cincinnati named of Bill Nimmo?
Now, wait a minute. I hit a button here.
You hit a button? Are we there?
Now, wait a minute.
I'm waiting. The dog's got a phone, too, I hear.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I hope we didn't lose her.
Hello,
Doris.
Here I am.
Thank goodness. We thought
you know what?
What?
I leaned my head back and I hit the phone and I hit the wrong button. Now you said who is it?
An announcer named Bill Nimmo. NIMMO.
Nimmo. I think that name sounds familiar.
From Cincinnati, WLW.
Yeah, but maybe I didn't work with him.
He said he did the remotes, and I think he mentioned that some band remotes in which you appeared. Barney Raff's band. That's the band.
You know what? When I was singing with the band.
Yeah.
And the fellows would come out and do the remotes.
Yeah.
We didn't always know their names, you know.
I see.
But
that's
sort of remember their
I
name
never,
a bit.
I can remember.
But I used to, after that, I worked at WLW.
Mm-hmm.
I was on staff there.
Uh-huh.
And at that time, Bill Nimmo was not there.
I see. Because Bill listens to this program. Yeah, and Les, you remember the Wednesday night fights, Pabst Blue Ribbon fights?
Oh, yes.
Okay, Bill was Bill the bartender, did the commercials. Remember him? When he wrote to me, I thought, my goodness.
I didn't watch the fights.
That's right. Well, and Les, you didn't watch
the fights. Who watches fights?
Les and I.
No, they were on
Brown,
radio at the time.
I don't believe you watched the fights.
No television then, never.
No.
I won't watch.
No, it was television.
I won't watch boxing anymore. I don't ever watch it. I think it's brutal, and I think it should be outlawed.
Oh, some of that is just... You know, by the way, I got to pass a note along to you, Les. The members of the Musicians Union in Hammond, Indiana, they want a copy of the chart of Nutcracker Suite.
Oh, boy.
And I said, are you kidding? If I ever remember, I'll ask Les. Doris, that's a marvelous...
I hope we can find it.
Well, I'm playing it tonight. Yeah. I always play it. Oh, yeah. Doris, I bought a set of video cassettes, The March of Time, and it involves show business and entertainment during the war years. I haven't gotten through the first reel yet, and here is Martin Block. Remember him, the disc jockey?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Make-believe ballroom.
Make-believe ballroom. All right, there's a big to-do in the paper about William B. Williams, Jr., and the title of the show, and there's some legal thing going on or something in New York, and Martin Block was the first guy, wasn't he? He did that.
Oh, yes.
Les, well, you were on the show, I'm sure, with him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Anytime.
Go ahead.
In fact, he did a thing with us one time. We had a bit in when we were doing theaters that we'd had it was a play on the hit parade, and instead of playing the 10 top tunes of that, we played the 10 top jingles.
Oh, yeah.
Of the time.
Uh-huh.
Like Pepsi Cola hits the spot, and all that.
It was a nickel a bottle.
And Martin Block made a tape for us. He was on the show with us every time, his voice, anyway. Uh-huh.
And Doris was singing there for the first time in how many years?
What were you singing, Doris?
She was singing twice as much for a nickel, too, right?
Oh,
yeah.
That's
cool. Is
you know,
big
Martin
for you.
Block is coming to hear us all.
Remember
what
well.
What was that? Well,
let's repeat what you just did, because Doris is missing this stuff.
No, the same thing. Pepsi Cola is the drink for you.
Yeah. Martin Block used to come in and hear us all the time.
Yeah,
remember
that's true.
The Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
Sure.
You joined Les where, Doris? I thought it was here in Chicago at Mike Todd Theater.
No, it was in New York.
In New York.
In New York, and then we played Mike Todd's afterwards.
You played Mike Todd's?
Some place out in the boondocks.
After we had done a lot of one-nighters, that's right. Chicago, and then you were there with us, and then you left, got married and left, I think.
Why didn't you stop me?
Came back a few years later.
We won't talk about that.
Then, were you with Les at the Black Hawk restaurant, Doris?
No.
Oh, she wasn't?
No.
I was with Bob Crosby at the Black Hawk.
Well, yeah, then you broadcast on this station,
I joined him when he was playing there.
Yeah.
Oh, you
did?
That's
when I joined the band.
With Bobby Haggard and those guys?
That's right. I love those guys.
Oh, they were great. Oh, yeah.
Oh. They were so terrific.
Oh, Eddie Miller. Oh, my God.
Eddie Miller. Oh.
Billy Butterfield.
And what was the guitar player's name?
Let's see.
Nappy Lamar.
Nappy Lamar. You're right.
Yeah.
Nappy Lamar, Ray Baduc.
And Ray Baduc.
Yeah.
I loved Ray.
And Bobby Haggard wrote What's New right there.
Are they all still living?
Haggard is.
Eddie Miller is.
Eddie Miller, I had, yeah. Eddie Miller.
Ray Baduc.
Yeah. Ray Baduc is around somewhere, I'm pretty sure. But then you broadcast.
And what about the piano player?
Let's see, who would that be? I'm trying.
Oh, boy.
Was that Bob Zierke?
No.
Joe Sullivan?
No.
No?
He was the boyfriend of the singer. What was her name?
What singer?
Doris Day.
You were the singer.
No, not with the band. The singer in New York.
The singer in what?
What? She was a marvelous jazz singer.
Why do I feel like I'm on What's
Lee
My
Wiley.
Oh.
Who?
Lee Wiley.
Oh, Lee Wiley, yes.
Yes,
she was wonderful.
Our piano player was her boyfriend.
Who was the boy? I can't think of it. It wasn't Joe Bushkin. Joe didn't play with him.
No, Joe didn't. I can't think of his name.
Lee Wiley. No, I can't think of his name either.
He was so good.
Yes, Jimmy Van Heusen loved her, too.
Oh, what was his name?
We'll never think of it. Now, let's go on to another question.
All right. I can't think of it, Doris.
Oh, that's terrible. Remember Billy Butterfield?
Oh, sure. Yeah, Billy Butterfield, right.
Oh, he was wonderful.
Yeah.
He did some records
and,
with us.
The trombone player, the valve trombone player.
Now
Juan Tiesel.
Who the hell was
Juan
that?
Juan Tiesel?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He went with Duke Ellington.
Juan
right.
Tiesel?
She said what Tiesel was with Crosby?
I think so.
I don't remember him.
I think he was for a short time.
I think he was for a short time. That's when
I met
him.
Duke, and then he went back to Duke afterwards.
I see. Doris, you were near the top in everything, in the movies, in records, and with the big bands and all that. And
as a humanitarian.
Right now. And I'm thinking of the song that won an Academy Award. What was it? Secret Love? Is that it?
No,
yes.
It's Magic.
Oh, it's Magic.
It's Magic? Didn't Secret Love win from Calamity Jane? Or am I wrong?
I'm not sure. It might have. Maybe it did.
I guess so.
Maybe it did.
Because Howard Keel. I remember Howard Keel in the movie. And you.
Yeah.
Okay, and here's a letter from a guy in Auburn, New York. Tonight, I just opened it up before I went on the air, and he says... And he's a 27-year-old young fellow. He says, have you ever seen the movie Young Man with a Horn with Kirk Douglas and Lauren Bacall and Doris Day?
I saw that 6 months ago and talked to Kirk Douglas about it on television.
I hated that movie.
You hated the movie?
Oh, I hated it.
It wasn't authentic.
No, it certainly wasn't. No, of course not.
Even to the trumpet player who didn't play anything like Bix.
No.
That's Harry James.
It was...
I didn't have a good time on that movie.
You didn't?
No.
No, be darned. Wasn't Hoagy Carmichael on that, too? Was he a piano player or something?
Yes, I think so.
I think so.
Was he?
Yeah. Doris, a long time ago, you had inadvertently gave me an opportunity to talk to my favorite songwriter, Johnny Mercer. You came through town and somebody from Columbia Records called... this station I was at and said, Mike, you want to talk to Doris Day? And I said, oh, yeah. So we're talking, and I said, gee, that's a nice record you made of Aren't You Glad You're You? And you said, you want to talk to the songwriter? And I said, well, yeah, I guess so. So here he is, Johnny Mercer. And we talked, and I'm thinking, I don't think John wrote that song. But it doesn't make a difference.
Didn't he?
No, he didn't.
Jimmy Van Heusen wrote that.
Yeah, right.
Oh.
I don't know who wrote the lyric.
I just thought of the piano player.
What is his name?
Jeff Stacy.
Oh. That's right. Yeah, he went with Benny Goodman afterwards.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Is he still living?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think I'm not sure. I think he is.
Oh, good.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know.
You're talking
about... Is Lee Wiley?
I don't
know.
Yes,
that's right. They were an item.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Mel Powell was another pianist, but he was with Goodman. He followed. He was in that. Teddy Wilson and Jeff Stacy and Mel Powell.
Yeah, I love Mel Powell.
Oh, yeah. Doris, when you had a chance to go out, when Les gave you a night off, did you go listen to music or did you go?
Absolutely.
Where did you go? Who would you go see?
Up on 52nd Street.
Uh-huh. And who? Who'd you listen
to? Everybody. We'd go from one club to the next.
Uh-huh.
And see them all and hear them all. And, oh,
those were
God,
the days.
Mabel Mercer and...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
All the good singers. And, oh, it was wonderful.
Now, when you decided to become a singer, who'd you listen to on the radio or records or whatever?
I loved Ella.
Uh-huh.
I loved Ella and still do.
Mm-hmm.
Greatest.
I loved all the jazz singers.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't sing jazz, really.
No, you didn't. You sang.
You had a good beat, Doris. You had a good beat. In your own way, you sang jazz.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
You sang the melody with a good beat. And that's jazz enough.
You know, Doris, I always admired Les's band because he had this kind of unwritten law. He said, you guys that want to blow jazz, okay, but I want to hear the melody.
Yeah.
Well,
he's right.
On the first chorus.
He's absolutely right. You've got to hear that melody.
That's
the first chorus.
Yeah.
After that, you can have your head.
Yeah. When I mentioned the Academy Award-winning song, Doris, can you remember an Oscar winner song in the last, I don't know how many years? I can't. I cannot think of any.
No.
You know.
No.
I don't know who won for drama. You know, I don't remember the actors and actors. Nobody
I don't even know a hit in the last
year
5 years.
Isn't that funny?
Isn't that something?
There's
we used
so many
to have,
awards
we used to have one every
you don't
every
know what
month
you're watching.
In the old days, a big hit.
Yeah.
What?
In the old days, we used to have one every month, a big hit, and a lot of semi hits.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to the movie just to hear. I'd hear a song on the radio, on a broadcast, and a guy would say, here's a new song by Jimmy Van Heusen and Johnny Burke or whatever, and it's from the Bing Crosby picture, and here it is, and I never heard it before. So then we go to the movie, and then after the movie, a couple of weeks, it would be a big hit.
Isn't that amazing?
It sure was. And it's a terrible indictment of the way the music business is going today. Here we have two wonderful talents, like you two folks... And how many I can name who don't have a recording affiliation? Les has now the Fantasy album, that wonderful new... First one in 10 years. Now, that's a crime. That this great sound. Guys like me and people listen to me want to hear Les Brown and Doris Day. And all we get is this nonsense. And
Well, I'm not working.
Do you want?
I mean, I'm.
Would you like to contribute?
I'm just, not doing my thing right now.
Would you want to?
I don't know.
If I do, mm-hmm.
I would have to. I would have to probably go to L.A. You know, and really settle in down there or
down here where the
somewhere,
action is, Doris.
You know, and start spending all my time doing that.
You mean to record, to make an album?
Oh, to just record and make an album?
Yeah, no, we don't
that
want...
That takes an awful lot of time.
Well, we'll start out with How Did He Look, okay?
Oh, there are a lot of songs that I can rattle off.
Okay,
rattle
off some that you've heard
but
recently.
But you know what?
What?
I would have to prepare for that, and it would take a lot of my time. And the problem is... that I am very involved with my animal organization.
Mm-hmm.
And that takes so much of my time. And I have so many of my own pets. And I just really love living in Carmel and relaxing and, you know, not getting into all of that because it's so different down there now.
Yeah, well, you just...
I don't like L.A. anymore.
Mike, if you saw where she lived and the beautiful state she had,
yeah,
you wouldn't want to ever come to L.A. It's beautiful up there.
Well, couldn't we have... Is it Carmel? Isn't that where Clint Eastwood is the sheriff?
He's the mayor.
Or mayor?
Well, I'm not in Carmel. I'm about 3 or 4 miles out of Carmel. So I am not under that jurisdiction. I'm in the county.
I see.
He is the mayor of Carmel, sure.
Okay.
He likes it here, too.
Well, you know what he's doing? He's back in some movie about Charlie Parker.
Well, he works all the time.
But he's doing this movie on the jazz giant, Charlie Parker.
What? Uh-huh.
And besides,
I read about that, yeah.
Yeah. So what we'll do is we'll form a posse, Clint and I, and Les, come out to Doris Day's, and we'll have a remote equipment with the band and all, and we'll do an album out there
okay.
on your place.
It's
all
not
right.
as easy as that, Mike.
That's a deal.
I'd be happy to do it. We could make it easy.
Doris, you heard Snowfall just now. It's a lovely, lovely record, and us guys are denied that quality of music because of the tin ears in the industry.
It's not that. It's the bottom line.
Well, it's still...
The tin ears of the audience.
The tin ears of the audience.
Teenagers.
So, Doris, you said you know a lot of songs. Give me a for instance. What song? The new material that you've heard that attracted your listening.
Oh.
A couple
when
of
you ask me that, I can never think of anything. Isn't that the
I
truth?
I think you'd like the way we were.
Favorite actress. You can never think.
Yeah. How about Les mentioned The Way We Were.
Oh, I love that.
Or We've Only Just Begun. I think you'd like that.
Yes, I would.
Or If. You like If?
If?
If.
All right, I don't like it already.
That's because I'm singing it.
No, I'm kidding. No, that's a good song.
I've never heard that song.
If's a beautiful thing.
Singer Diane Schur.
Oh, I love her.
Do you really? Oh, totally.
She's marvelous.
Very good.
You know something? I had her on the show, and I said, Diane, you know, you have probably one of the best recordings of Impossible, the song Steve Allen wrote. And she said, you know where I heard it? And I said, no, where? She said, on your United Airlines show. And I have a in-flight listening program, on which Les is my guest next month, by the way. And I said, no kidding. And she said, no, I never knew that song existed. I said, how can that be? You mean you're in the business and you don't know?
How can you not know that song?
Mike, we recorded that.
Well, Terry Como had such a hit record.
Well, no, that's a different one. It's Impossible.
No, it's Impossible. But this is
a cartoon called Impossible.
Yeah, Nat Cole did it.
Yeah.
Nat Cole did it.
And we recorded that when we were on the Steve Allen show.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The singer last year.
Back in fifth, I can't remember.
Was sang the song.
Can't remember the melody at all. It was 1958 we did it.
Nat Cole did it?
Yes.
Then I would know it.
Yeah, he did it with...
And that's a different one than Perry Como did.
Oh, yeah,
that's,
yeah.
It's Impossible.
Yeah, that's a different
one. Oh, I think I know. I remember. Because I know everything that Nat Cole did.
Oh, he was great.
Oh, boy.
I adored him.
You're talking about one of the great... talents in recorded sound he stands almost alone.
Oh, so fabulous.
Piano, I loved his piano. I loved his trio and that's great.
Yeah.
Doris, you sure we can't convince you to do an album?
I'm yawning.
Can you stay awake another 30 seconds?
I don't know. I can't promise it.
If I promise to get somebody to feed the animals.
My babies are all asleep.
Are they?
Yeah, they're all asleep.
What kind of dogs, what type of dogs do you have?
All kinds.
All kinds?
Yeah.
I was going to get a standard schnauzer. Do you know that?
Oh, they're fabulous.
Isn't that a lovely dog?
Fabulous.
Yes. Doris, I'm going to let you go to sleep. Because I get boring myself. When I talk to friends here in Chicago, they kind of doze off. And it's when it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, you're going to ask, I know it's time to dummy up.
What hours are you on, Mike?
I'm on all night right now.
Every night?
No, just on the weekend.
Oh, I see.
I'd like to be more often, but that's the way
it
goes.
Tell her, I told Doris that Jasbo was going to be on from WNEW, too. But
yeah, and he's supposed to call.
You explained that to Doris.
Doris, we were going to have Jasbo Collins on. He's on at WNEW in New York. And we were going to combine both our audiences.
And he's not on Saturday night.
And they just took him off Saturday night for some reason or other.
Really?
That's right. So,
isn't that strange?
Yeah, and...
when you speak with him, give him my love.
I sure will.
All right.
I'll be talking with him.
All right, it's good to talk to both of you.
Oh, it's...
Hello, I'll see you next month, and when we get up...
see you up here.
Yeah, we'll be there in the middle of January.
Okay, darling, thanks for your Christmas card.
Wait a minute. What's happening in January?
He's coming up here.
We're playing for an opening of a golf resort up there for Marvin Davis. And,
I see.
Doris and I are going to have dinner together.
Okay. All right, Doris. And then I'll be up there with a tape recorder.
Okay. That would be fun.
Well, thank
you. Come up and have dinner with us.
Oh, I'd really love that. Doris, thank you so much for sharing
the time.
My
pleasure.
All right. And Les, I'll listen for you on United Airlines Channel 8.
Yeah, I didn't get your cassette yet.
I sent that a week ago.
Well, you know the mail's in right now.
Well,
good night, you guys.
Good night, Doris.
And Merry Christmas.
Same to you, Doris.
And Happy New Year and all that stuff.
All that stuff.
Happy New Year, Doris.
Same
to
you.
Okay.
3 weeks.
Yeah, love you.
Love you, too.
Night.
Good night. Les,
yeah.
Thank you very much. I'm going to let you go because you are now 3 hours past your bedtime. And you got to read, right, before you go to sleep?
I've been reading. I'm waiting for you.
Okay.
All right, what happened?
We're here.
What was that?
Oh, okay. Are you still there?
Yeah.
All right. You're going to be in Carmel, California in January. Are you ever coming to Chicago again? I guess not.
Well, we have nothing planned in the future. We confine our activities, Mike, now to the West Coast.
You know,
anywhere from Seattle down to the border, down to San Diego.
I see. Oh,
but
yeah.
Mostly right here in town.
Uh-huh.
We just did a couple of days at Disneyland and last weekend, and now we're going to an album next week. We play New Year's Eve up at Tahoe.
Oh, yeah.
And then in January, we're going to be playing for the Super Bowl parties, one for... Alex Spanis, the owner of the Chargers, and then one for...
Ed McCaskey?
No, one for the Pete Rozelle on Friday night and Saturday night for the NFL alumni and the hotel.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
We're going to be pretty busy in January.
Well, then you might run into Ed McCaskey of the Bears, the chairman of the board of the Bears.
Uh-huh.
And he wants to talk to you, so he'll stop by and say hello to you.
If he does, tell him to come up and say hello, because they're playing the party where they have all the owners and their associates.
Oh, yeah, then you'll see Ed, because he's probably sleeping now. Why don't we tell you a funny story before I let you go? Del Courtney, you know Del.
Yeah? He's over in Hawaii now.
Yeah, he's in Hawaii. And he said, I was talking to him the other night, and he said... you know, Les was just over here with his wife a couple of months ago, and he came over to do something with the band, and Butch Stone came a day early, and he was outside the hotel of this Royal Hawaiian Room or whatever, the Monarch Room, whatever he plays, and he said, so I had the band do Les's theme song, Leapfrog, and Butch got so confused, he dashed in into the... into the room, he thought he was late for your engagement.
Yeah, that I Del told me about that.
That's a funny story.
It's true too.
Yeah. Explain to the folks, Les, how you can be there at home at Pacific Palisades, California, and not with Bob Hope.
Well, we did last Saturday. We recorded all the music for this forthcoming show.
Okay.
And he takes these tapes with him, and they just sing over their our music.
I see.
And now another thing happened. You know when he went to Beirut?
Yeah.
A couple of years ago?
Right.
During that problem we had over there. And they wouldn't let him do the show in Beirut, so he had to do it on an aircraft carrier out in the Mediterranean.
That's right, yeah.
And so there, all at once, I'm watching the show. Now I know where the music came from because we were
pre-recorded, but there's a Navy band playing like mad and our music coming out of these speakers. And they're sidelining to it. And I go to the club the next day and they said, "Hey, that band sounded pretty good, that Navy band." I said, "It should. That's our music." Same thing when he did his Christmas show in Florida. We do pre-record all the music here, and now we don't have to go with them, but the high-tech takes care of it.
So you record the music in California, and Hope goes where he wants to go. He takes your music with him.
Takes right with him and sings over him.
I'll be darned. And Jeff Clarkson is his music director, he tells me. Is that
yes,
correct?
Yes, I...
Your old piano
I got
player.
Him that job. I said, "Bob, take Jeff." Bob used to try to do it himself.
Oh.
And so I told him, "You take Jeff. I'll give up Jeff if..." And he's had a job ever since with Bob, and he travels all over the world with him.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Is it true that Bob Hope has got long pockets and short arms, Les?
I'd rather not comment on that.
Because he doesn't want to take a full band, so we'll leave it unsaid.
No, it wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't make any kind of sense. No. We're happy because we don't want to travel.
I remember about 15 years ago, I went to three of your last trips to Chicago. Remember, I'd see you, and you say, "Mike, this is the last time, no more road." And next year, I'd go to some other place, and there you are. "Mike, this is definitely it. But this is it, right? No more."
But Mike, we haven't.
I know.
Traveled in years.
Yeah, and I sure miss you guys coming to town.
Well, we miss it too, in a way.
Yeah, in a way.
No, we average our two a week out here. We're happy with 100 gigs a year around that, and plus the Hope shows, and plus a little recording now and then.
Yeah.
And television now and then. Yeah. We're enjoying ourselves.
Well, that's the main thing. I'm coming out to the coast there, and we'll have a cup of coffee.
Please do.
All right. And remember, I'm playing Nutcracker again tonight. And the guys at the Hammond local are looking for the chart for Tchaikovsky. And
if we can find them, they can have them.
All right.
Okay.
All right, Les, thank you so much. Well, I want to tell you, I really appreciate the time.
Well, have a happy new year, Mike.
You
too. Thanks for putting me on United Airlines. I'll try to get on a flight.
Yeah.
Well, we'll probably have a United flight sometime this
year. All right, good.
Right.
Yeah. Because you'll be on, I think, January and February. So folks who are listening to us, and I want to tell you something, Les. I got a note here. I got the Christmas mail here. Let me tell you how far. I didn't realize there were that many listeners out that far away. New London, Iowa, Winfield, Kansas, Ruston, Louisiana, Blue Eye, Missouri, St. Louis, Minneapolis, Minnesota, Bradford, Pennsylvania, Auburn and Rochester, New York, Sydney, Nebraska, Bismarck, North Dakota, Toledo.
How many watts do you have?
We have more than 250. We have 50,000.
That's why. You've got a clear channel, more or less.
Yeah, but I'm saying that there are folks, all those points reporting, want to hear Les Brown and Doris Day.
Well, why don't you play some?
I've been playing Les.
You probably lulled them to sleep, without talk. Now they won't be able to hear it.
They're dozing off now, I can see. All right, Les, I'll talk with you later.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
To you and your listeners.
Thank you very much, Les. Good night.
You betcha.
Good night.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Les Brown and, let's see, there was Billy Usselton there on that saxophone. Excuse me. A little extraneous noise back there. That's the tape rewinding. That was an interview with Doris Day and Les Brown. I did it a year ago, Christmas, 87. And I thought I'd play it again. So many folks had asked to hear it who had missed it. And I hope you, those who missed it, enjoyed it. And those who heard it didn't mind hearing it again. Because it, as I mentioned several times, that Les is my all-time favorite orchestra. And we've been friends a long time. Billy Usselton there, Don Trenner on the piano, who turned out to be Steve Allen's music director.
Mike Rapchak with Doris Day and Les Brown from December of 1987. Paul Harvey did a little piece on Doris Day. It's about 3 minutes long. I don't know the date, but here it is. Here's Paul Harvey and his look at Doris Day.
Now, the rest of the story. Little Dory Kappelhoff was born to dance. Her talent was apparent by the time she entered kindergarten. Through grammar school, she took dancing lessons and performed in public. All kinds of dancing came easy to Dory. Tap and modern acrobatic and ballet, everything. And still in those days, even the most gifted dancers needed partners. So Dory got herself a partner, a 12-year-old boy named Jerry Doherty from her dancing school. That is how the team of Doherty and Kappelhoff came to be and came to become an instant success in their hometown, Cincinnati. They pleased every audience. They won every contest. In fact, the $500 first prize money from one city competition financed a trip to Hollywood. Their visit was intended to last only a month, but the response to Doherty and Kappelhoff was so positive that they and their families decided to stay. They'd return to Cincinnati briefly to settle affairs, to say their goodbyes, but then Hollywood, permanently. Dory was just barely a teenager at the time. And then came the night of October 13, 1937, Friday the 13th. Dory and her mother had planned to leave for the West Coast the following morning. But that night, Dory and three young friends went for a car ride. It was a cold, rainy night, so the car windows were closed tightly. The radio was going full blast. Crossing the railroad tracks, none of the youngsters heard the locomotive coming, nor did they see its light until it was too late. In the crash, both in the front seat were thrown through the windshield. Dory crawled from the back seat onto the pavement, tried to stand but could not. Still in shock, she reached down to feel her right leg, discovered that she was bleeding, and then she felt the jagged, protruding bones, and everything went black. Dory's first waking thoughts in the hospital were concern for her dancing. The doctors didn't tell her right away that her leg had been shattered, that she may never walk again, much less dance. There was intricate surgery on that leg, followed by months in a wheelchair. A premature attempt at dancing re-broke Dory's leg. Now the girl would have to spend at least another year in a heavy cast and on crutches if the bones were ever to heal. And so, one Friday the 13th, died the dance team of Doherty and Kappelhoff. Talented young Jerry Doherty never did find another suitable partner. Instead, he finished high school and became a milkman. As for Dory, therapy was prescribed for her to help her endure the agonizing months of inactivity. The therapy in which she had no real interest at first. Singing lessons. Singing. You see, on the Hollywood Walk of Fame, one star shines as brightly as any. That of a girl named Dory. Dory Kappelhoff. Whose remarkable singing opened all of the doors, radio, recordings, movies, television. She became the epitome of American womanhood. Doris Day. That's right, Doris Day. Only now you know the rest of the story.
And there's Paul Harvey's The Rest of the Story. And it's amazing over the many years that that particular series of radio shows was on the air, how much he drew you in and made you wonder, gosh, who is he talking about? And in this particular case, it happened to be Doris Day. Just riveting radio, riveting writing by Paul Harvey. So I hope you enjoyed that. We do have some time left before the end of the first hour, and so we're going to play a few songs sung by Doris Day. Here's Doris Day with My Dreams Are Getting Better All the Time here on Same Time, Same Station. Link up with us by sending something to Facebook, in John Reed's Facebook, so he'll probably see it. Same time, comma, same station. You can also call us, area 714-449-1958. Or there's always email, Gassman is G-A-S-S-M-A-N. And I am LarryGassman1@gmail.com.
And I read Facebook occasionally, not as often as I used to, but my name is still, or my email rather, is still john1gassman@gmail.com.